what I call it, Monomoy moonshine. And one time I was in there, and there was a lady in there, and a cat kept jumping up on the table where he was cutting meat. So Jesse said, now, one more time, cat, jump up here, you'll be the last jump. So this is kind of a grim story, but it's true. So Jesse had these long knives he hacked up meat with, and the cat jumped up just one more time, which was his last. It's like, boom! Off the head.
Seafaring men got into violent arguments about where the channels were, store still exist?
No.
Is it made into any?
No.
No.
It's in Quebec.
Yeah, that's what I understood, but I never knew for sure.
Right across from Bertans.
Yep. Well, that was my understanding, but I wasn't sure I was right on.
There is a book written about the village not everybody knows about. It's the Bright Sands by Robert Louis Taylor. And he was a Pulitzer Prize winner. And it's all about the village, Andrew Harding's Lane. It's in every village that has a, I've read it about six times. It rolls out several every time, but not everybody knows.
It's out of print now.
When was it written?
It's out of print even in paperback.
No, but I mean about when was it?
In the 50s.
1954.
Really?
1954.
Good, Goodwater was called Good Samuel. They all had different names, but you couldn't miss them.
Ted Ryan and George Gould is in there, if you remember.
Bob Tuttle.
Bob Tuttle.
Anybody got a copy they can give the historical?
They may have, somebody stole one they had in the library, I think. The only source is a secondhand bookstore now. Right in the front of the copy I have in the hardback, it has a map of all around Andrew Harding's Lane.
Did they do it in paperback, or was it just?
They did it in paperback, but that's out of print too.
We tried to get.
He wrote, he was a very fine author, Robert Louis Taylor. He wrote The Travels of Jamie McFetters, and he wrote The Journey to Matecum. Those were both put on television serials, I remember. I think it's well worth reading. It has a lot of the old Chatham and Howard stories in there. Of course, it's all fiction, but. Well, I mean, the plot of
it. But Bart Smith used to tell a lot of stories about the Rum Runners and their storing their liquor up in the old barn, which is where the garage is now. Do you know any of those? Do you remember any of those?
No, that was a story, but I don't recall it well. When one night, some hijackers came there and they held Marcus up and pointed him down and they were going to shoot him. He didn't tell them about the liquor, but he didn't think about it, didn't have anything to do with it. But they thought they had some steward in that barn and searched it all over, but they didn't find any. I don't know any more than that. It's really not a story.
Remember, he used to talk about it.
He had some great stories. When I went into the oyster business in 1938, he was still there, and he used to come over with his barrel of oysters, and he packed one and scowl with his cat, Ike, the old cat. Ike would always jump upon the bench if you were working on your oysters, and he'd bunch it with his shoulder. He wanted you to open his scowl. He went out on the scow with Mark and the 20 oysters, and he would even swim ashore.
There was sort of a song, Gunny Yelpish, about all of us young ones in the village, about how we dump oyster on the Oyster River, landfill, and have a spring.
Don't you mean?
Then there was Alfred Nicholson on Anne Crowning Lane that was caught with a bunch of liquor. We were just little kids, but we were playing in the bushes opposite his house. And he came running up, and Chief Elbert came down, and there was a lot of commotion. We had heard about the Rum Runners being in that night. And you could hear the boats.
If you're shy about singing the song now, maybe you do it for us later.
But I remember the words. Down the Oyster River came the Iron Bone, commanded by the captain, Mr. Howard Jones. Howard had the orders on the straight you see to land a little liquor in by 3:30. So speed up your motors, look out for your brand. Brand a party liquor when you run out of gas. Howard Dome, master of the Oyster River or something. Johnny. Now, okay, you tell us, you're the one that told us all about it. In fact, there was Gunny, I was doing lots of that, because he and his father went down there on Morris Island and lived the life of Indians.
Everybody drank out of that bucket. I remember that in the past,
first grade there, and they gave me the second copy. And that was supposed to be a real nice young college school. We did the other kid and I did something, and Mrs. Parrish had this big 18-inch bigly ruler. She had us come up in front of the class, and I was thinking, hold your hand, but boy, she gave him the four of the flicks across the back of her hand, that ruler, and that's famous out. For a time being.
A long time before that, you see, these two are my ex-pupils. I went to Dublin School, and I looked at my report card yesterday. My mother had saved all of my report cards right straight through to normal school. And I looked at those for the village school, and this I noted about them. The first three grades that I was there, they were marking them with numerals, 90, 95, 80, that sort of thing. And the fourth year, they changed to the ABC business. So I suppose the school committee, about 1912, so decided to have the letter markings rather than the other. And my first teacher was Alice Smith, and the next three teachers was Jenny S. Reno. But what happened to her, I don't know. I haven't heard any more about her.
Who was your first teacher, Holland, in that school? Mrs. Calder?
Yeah, she followed, she was a teacher who came in after Jenny Reno left. But I don't know what happened to Jenny Reno, whether she had another job or got married or what, never heard any more about her.
Captain Norman Gilchrist retired from the Navy, living over in Cedar Rapids, and here, going to school as a young boy. And he tells a wonderful tale of this school down here at the corner of Cedar Rapids, Skunk Snake Road, and the State Harbor Road. Turning over the outhouse, but unfortunately there was a young lady in it.
I just heard George Moole's name mentioned here a few minutes ago, which brings to mind the time when Freeman House and I were working at Hawes House, and they used to put on about two clam bakes a year in the middle of the summer. So Freeman and I went over the beach, you know, to collect all the wood and the seaweed and get the firewood. And it was thick fog. As a matter of fact, they didn't even know whether they were going to have the date or not. But anyway, we went over. People came down from over the hotel or the boarding house. And they were standing around waiting, you know, for things to get cooked. And you could hear this dory coming in the fog, you know. You could hear the oars, you know, bumping against the floating. So, of course, everybody ran down to shore, you know, and this dory came up on the beach. And it was George Tuckline, George Poole. And he hollered and he says, what port is this? And somebody says, Chatham. And he says, well, shove me offshore, he says. It's made the day for those people because the moon cusses, you know, was supposed to be, Chatham was supposed to be a bad port to enter. So he says, shove me offshore.
Howard, why are you talking about Freeman? Tell about Freeman's hens.
Yeah.
Well, Freeman House's hens.
He set a hen there one time. I think he had something like 12 or 15 eggs under it. And 11 of them came out in these big, big white rock roosters. Big, big things with big as eagles. And in with the rest, they had a bunch of wild ducks. And they were young, you know, small, and they started in to learn to fly. In the back of the horse house there, where the inlet was, downhill, and those ducks used to run down that hill, you know, and take off in the wind. And those roosters tried the same thing. The only thing that you find in your life, and those roosters going in over in, they just couldn't. We had a lot of fun around there. There was one woman there, I can't remember her name now, probably just as well, but she was a guest at the inn there. And she was nosy, you know, and Mikey Howard, he didn't take too kindly to her, even though she was a paying guest. So we had a real rainy spell there, you know, for quite a while. And so she says to him one morning, he says, good morning. She says, good morning. She says, do you think it'll stop raining? And he says, if it don't, he says, it's going to be a hell of a long wet spell.
Howard,
Bob Regan was his dear's grandfather. He always used to tell him about going Squire Regan. He'd say Squire, he'd say Squire.
That was a common creepy.
Yeah. Well, everybody had that name down there.
He used to creep around people's
woodpiles
so he didn't know it.
Wilbur Patterson there, he picked him there once. I think he loaded up some wood.
Yeah, they had a
cat party
and the
four,
the things of the stove blew up.
Yeah.
The gunpowder
powder. I don't care to see too much because, well, I know that two people must be
related for.
Getting back to Bio Smith again, he and Joe D. Bloomer were always at sword points as to which one knew the most. They were both quite learned in their own way. So Joe D. came in one day and he says to Bio, he says, you know, he says, I can kill a bear, he says, with my bare hands. And Bio says, yes, he says, you keep on reading them Dick Carter stories, you can do almost anything.
Tell him about you. Everybody told about Jesse Tuttle, but you didn't tell about the running your father had with Jesse Tuttle.
Well, my father went in there one day, and Jesse was in his tedia, you know, college. And he started him going in this great tirade to know about a foreign moving into town. And they come in from here to there and everywhere. And then he looked up right out of a clear sky, and he says to my father, he says, and James, he says, that goes for you, too. The whole story was my father jumped over the counter and he landed in front of Tuttle and he says, listen, he says, none of my folks come sailing up the East River, he says, with the clothes and the bag, he says, before yours ever came here. He says, that's all right, Francis. He says, that didn't mean in your face. In fact, we gave him a meat market.
I used to speak to Joe Bloomer there, Papa Joe. He used to go around blowing up wrecks. He used to fight a guy with dynamite. And you think he'd probably know, jump a wreck and drift around and come ashore in the wrong place. Somebody, if he had a hold of Joe, he'd go blow it up. Mm-hmm. When the fishermen were living down in the power hole down in on my point, there was a wreck after a storm from drifting in the harbor. It went right into the power hole and right in everybody's way. So they got a hold of Joe, come down and blow it up for him. He came down with a good southwest wind blow and he blew it, went down to his catboat and everything got soaked and wet. He come, finally landed and came jumping up to the shanty there and rubber boots on, stick a dynamite in his mouth and both hands full. Has anybody got a fire going to throw him? By that time, all the women took off from the lighthouse. Yeah. Boy, he dried out his dynamite on the stove. They all set to blow up the wreck, and Russell Burst was down there, and he had a brand new dory. Tommy Gill had just made for him up in the dope farm. So he got an awful lot of that dory. And Russell said, gosh, Joe, don't you want me to move my dory and get out of the way? No, I'm going to blow everything right off your dory. This is kind of chunk of wreck, and it's yet one of these big knees in it. One side of it was standing about this tall, about a foot square. When he touched her off, one of these knees went through the air like a boomerang and landed right in the middle of Russell's dory and laid her right in the middle.
Howard, seems to me you had a lot of so-called characters down there. Wasn't there China Josh and Crazy Josh Boomer and who was somebody else?
Well, let's see, we had Sam Dill. He used to go around selling corn balls. Around the bushel basket. You could get one of those, you really had his name, it lasts all day. Let's see, who else did we have? A lot of people around there.
There was one on Hallway Street right near you. He used to call him the Walk Man, but I don't know.
Well, that was Billy Hallway.
He went barefoot and back and forth.
That was Billy Hallway. Some of his people, Hallway Street was named for some of his people.
Well, I mentioned Russell A. Burris. Lake Avenue, and a lot of stories about him. And here's one of the stories. He had a few hens out there in his backyard, not many, five or six hens, and he used to sell eggs to the summer people. So he was a pretty sharp boy, this Russell A. Burris, and he loved the AMP and all, and he'd get these cheap Cold Storage eggs, and he'd go home, and he would put them on the two or three hens he had today. And the people would call, "Well, Russell, got any good fresh eggs today?" "Well, let's go out there in the hen yard and take a look." They go out, "Well, I don't know if this old hen lady eggs or not." So he reached underneath the hen, he dragged out these Post George AMP eggs, and all the time, good price.
Now, there was another one, Klondike Frank.
Yeah, he did. He went to Klondike during the gold rush.
He was
Louis Pratt's pilot.
He called him Uncle Frank.
Yeah. No, he went up on the gold rush. Never got ready, but he had a lot of fun on the top. Then, of course, we had old Cap Point. He was around there. He wasn't as big as I am, but I can't understand how it was that he was cut to be a full captain. Well, I was a little taller. It was like Ma, Howard, but they
are. I wanted to have us stand up and stretch for a moment, and then Captain Pike would be a great one to start off again after we sit down. But these chairs, from my experience, get awful hard. So, if you just stand up and stretch.